Wrote this book that Johnny talked about so prolifically this morning about how important the Word of God is. In the last days, there's supposed to be a noisome, grievous boil or sore that's supposed to come on the flesh. Initially, it's supposed to be one boil, one sore. But I'll show you later on how that's supposed to spread. And that's all tied in with the vials, vial 1 through 7. I've always been curious about that mark. A lot of other preachers have too. When I first came into our work many years ago as a young man up in northern Arkansas, as a boy, a teenager, I had a very simplistic view of that mark. And that was just 666 stamped on your forehead or your hand. But over the years, as I've studied, the more complicated this thing has become. Now, eventually, I'll get around to showing you what I think it could be, what it might be, what it is and what it isn't. But it seems the more you study the Word of God, the more you realize there's a lot more to each individual thing than you thought there was. So you have to be careful and not dip over and go crazy on something. On the other hand, you have to realize maybe it's not as simplistic as you thought. Now, the reason I'm covering this in such a prolific way is because this government has deceived the American public, and it's fantastic, and nobody can do anything about it. They have been able to brainwash the media. They've been able to brainwash the teachers that teach our children in the schools. And I'm not one that normally gets on a kick about stuff like this, and I don't want to get on a kick about this. But this business of chlorofluorocarbons destroying the ozone layer is absolutely, totally false. If you think it's happening because of all the freon that came up from the different types of refrigeration units that we have across the world, if you think it's because of the freon from your car, what happened was, several years ago, before the great chlorofluorocarbon scare and the ozone layer is being depleted came out, the manufacturers of freon had a patent on it, and they had held that patent for years. The patent was about to run out, and naturally the company that held the freon patent would lose a great deal of money because there were just literally hundreds of little small groups, companies, that were getting ready to jump in on it once the patent ran out. See, a patent can only go so long. And then they would be able to drain off the profits that this great company was making. Well, this great company is run by men who aren't fools and whose God is literally money. And so before it ran out, they concocted a plan. And they decided that if they could produce some sort of a scare that would cause freon to no longer be usable, and they could produce behind the scenes some substitutes for it, that when all of a sudden the actual patent ran out on freon, all of a sudden there could be a big scare, and everybody would think chlorofluorocarbons from freon were destroying the ozone layer. Then these other companies couldn't jump in on the patent. It wouldn't matter anymore. Who cares about it? And they would be able, before this happened, to patent all these new types of substitutes for freons they had, which are very expensive. That's exactly what they did. Scientists are no different from anyone else. They're just as crooked as the rest of us because they're born with the same carnal nature. And so they found a group of scientists out in California that ran some tests that didn't even include going up and checking the ozone layer, but ran some tests in a lab that proved that chlorofluorocarbons nip off that third oxygen molecule and deplete ozone. Well, big deal. Every scientific fool in the world knew that. But they took that report, blew it up, spread it across in schools, spread it across the educational spectrum, and got everybody to believing it. And now when I talk to people about it, they think I'm crazy. And I know I'm not crazy. I'm a scientist, and I don't have anything to gain from this. So I have watched them pull off the greatest hoax in history. And the Vice President of the United States is the man who contributed more to this hoax than any other man on the earth. And probably he's going to be elected as our next president. And he's the one who led people to believe this, lock, stock, and barrel, and it is not true. Physical transport of atmospheric gases. Atmospheric gases migrate from the equator to the poles in both the northern and southern hemisphere. When Don and I were in the meteorological superintendent's course in Rantoul, Illinois, and sometimes they'd load us in a bus and take us up to the University of Chicago, this was a standard diagram in all meteorological text. It has never been changed because all the different computerizations and things have proved it's true that atmospheric gases migrate from the equator to the poles in both the northern and southern hemisphere. With that in mind, we know for an absolute fact that 74%, actually it's a little more than this, but I don't want to fudge, 74% of all chlorofluorocarbons that are supposed to be depleting the ozone layer are released in the industrialized northern hemisphere. Now, we know for a fact that gases released from the equator, north of the equator, all migrate to the North Pole, but there's no ozone hole here. If 74% of all chlorofluorocarbons that are produced are released in the industrialized northern hemisphere, and that's a fact, and that's where most of your cars are, most of your industries are, and if all the gases in the southern hemisphere migrate to the South Pole, how come that on only 26% in the southern hemisphere, you now have a tremendous hole, the ozone hole at the South Pole that's growing, and yet one has never appeared at the North Pole? The answer is so obvious, it's pathetic. But nobody will listen. You talk about DuPont, the company DuPont, having power. You talk about lobby in Congress. You talk about money going to political pockets. DuPont has paid more into politicians' pockets than any other group. And they have poured a lot of money into politicians' pockets to cover this up. And it's the greatest cover-up I've ever seen in my life. And to be frank, when I first started doing this, I was afraid, I'm sorry if this sounds dramatic, that somebody might try to kill me. Because it's a big thing. But now, after all these years, it's not going to be exposed. So why did this big hole appear at the South Pole and not at the North Pole, if it's the chlorofluorocarbons from all this industrial complexes that we have that are releasing these chlorofluorocarbons, if it's the freon from our automobiles? The reason that the ozone hole first appeared at the South Pole and never has appeared at the North Pole is a very simple one. Most volcanoes are located in the southern hemisphere. There is an active volcano in Antarctica and a vast chain between Chile and Antarctica. If the chlorofluorocarbons were destroying the ozone layer, then the hole would have appeared first in the northern hemisphere over the North Pole, but it didn't. Now, when they first put out all this garbage and did away with freon and made you pay through the nose when you went to get your air conditioning units hopped up, they took advantage of the American public and they got away with it. It is not the chlorofluorocarbons that are actually destroying the ozone layer. I showed you the basic reasons why last Sunday. First of all, I showed you all the freon gases are heavier than a standard atmospheric sample of air. They can't rise. I showed you the tropopause layer that God put around the earth with a temperature inversion, where even if they could rise, which they can't, then they would not be able to penetrate the tropopause layer. What's doing it are forceful injections of volcanic eruptions into the tropopause layer. To graphically illustrate my point, here are the distributions of the Earth's active volcanoes. Notice you have none here in northern Russia. You have none up here in Greenland. You have none across northern Canada. 1, 2, 3 around Iceland and north of Iceland. There are 3 active volcanoes. Now look how far south we've come from the North Pole, which is right here. Now we're going down a little further, and we've gone past most of Russia, northern Canada, all of Greenland, Baffin Island. We've now come down past the Scandinavian Peninsula. We've come down across Finland, parts of eastern Russia. Now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 active volcanoes. It's the volcanoes that are causing the depletion of the ozone layer. That's why you don't have an ozone hole at the North Pole, because it's the volcanoes. Well, where are most of the volcanoes? Right here in the southern hemisphere. Here's, this is 5 degrees. Here. You only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now take a look down here south of 45 degrees. Look at all these volcanoes. They're loaded. You've got a huge chain down through South America. Look at that chain down through Peru. So that's the most active area on the earth of volcanoes. Look at them, more than anywhere else on the planet. And right here at the South Pole, Erebus is an active volcano. That's what caused the ozone. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, if it's that simple, how come people haven't believed it? People are going to believe what the government puts out. And right now, down here in Darnell High School, in Russell High School, you've got teachers in those science classes that are putting out that garbage, who don't have a sense that God gave a soda cracker, in going back and researching and seeing if it's true, because after all, everybody believes it. But it's the volcanic eruptions. Now notice where these active volcanoes are. South America and Antarctica. That's where the hole first appeared. Reason number 5. That was reason number 4. Volcanic eruptions, when they occur, blow a whole bevy of molecules and ions into the stratosphere that electrostatically break down the ozone layer through chemical reactions. They blow heavier elements straight through the worldwide temperature inversion. Don will tell you, we've got a tropopause layer above us. Remember in school they called it a typical, tropical, tropical tropopause? There are different levels, but we've got a tropopause level above us. So even if the chlorofluorocarbons were light enough to rise through an atmospheric sample, which they can't, but even if they could, they couldn't naturally, of their own volition, through rising, break through a temperature inversion to get up into the stratosphere where the ozone is. Volcanic eruptions, boom, have a tremendous ejection force, a powerful force that goes straight up. When it does, as you can see here, this is what it carries up into the area of the ozone. Chlorine molecules, hydrogen chloride molecules, sulfur dioxide molecules, nitrogen oxide molecules, and this is what ozone looks like. It's 3 oxygen molecules bonded together. Take this one off and you have oxygen. That's an oxygen molecule. Every time you breathe, you're taking that in. They're bonded together. That's a very strong bond. Very hard to break. But this is a very weak bond with a third one blended on. It changes from oxygen to ozone. Any one of these, sulfur dioxide, nitric oxide, hydrogen chloride, chlorine molecule, it has a stronger attraction for this molecule than these 2 oxygen molecules do. And any one of these blown up there will pluck this off, turn it back to oxygen, and then it cannot filter out ultraviolet radiation. In Revelation 16:2, we're told, and the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image. Verse 9, Revelation 16:9. And men were scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of God which had power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. This noisome grievous sore is singular. Wherever that mark of the beast is, on the hand or the forehead, there's something there that reacts to ultraviolet radiation in a most horrifying way. And many of the chemical elements on a periodic chemistry chart do react to ultraviolet radiation. Initially, it produces a noisome grievous boil and sore. But once it does that in the place where this was actually placed, it begins to spread, and later on I'll show you where they're plural. I may not get to it today, but I will before long. God made volcanoes. God wrote the prophecies. God made every one of these elements. God made the ozone layer. God is breaking down his own ozone layer by his own power because of the sinful condition of men. And because when the tribulation period starts, God's wrath is going to be poured out on men and women who simply would not turn from their wicked ways, but chose to follow their own dictates. Anytime you have a volcanic eruption, as you can see here, like the El Chocón eruption of April 4th, 1982, it blows volcanic molecules, chlorine, hydrogen chloride, nitric oxide, sulfur oxide, nitrates, up here where the actual ozone layer exists. When it gets up there, it starts plucking off those little third oxygen molecules off of the other 2 and leaves nothing but oxygen, which will not filter ultraviolet radiation. This is the El Chocón eruption that occurred down here in Mexico. You can see Mexico here You can see Guatemala down here. You can see right here the cloud that came up from it. When it depleted the ozone layer dramatically, I thought surely that finally the government would have to admit that it had deceived the American public, and that really wasn't what was causing it to break down. In 1980, I told people everywhere I went, the ozone hole will continue to grow. At that time, the government reports from scientists out of Washington and across the country said, No. Now that we've stopped the chlorofluorocarbons, it won't continue to grow. I said, no, it will continue to grow because it's volcanic eruptions that are causing it. Well, it continued to grow. Let me tell you what those lying devils did. And I called them just what they are. They said, it's residual effect. They said, because we've got all the chlorofluorocarbons already up there, we put them all up there, it's residual that's causing it to break down. Then they made a prediction. They said by 1986, all of them will have vanished. And then you'll see it start to decrease. I said, no, you won't. It'll continue to increase because it's not caused by chlorofluorocarbon. 1988 rolled around and it was still growing. 1989 rolled around, it was still growing. 1990 rolled around, it was still growing. Then they came out and said, we miscalculated. It appears the residual effects of the chlorofluorocarbons may go on for centuries. They lied. They flat lied. And they're still lying. And every time you go down to the place to get your air conditioner recharged, you're paying four or five times what you'd normally pay. And the DuPont company is making money like you would not believe. Well, Charlie, they're more dishonest than used car salesmen. Now, that's bad. That's bad. I had this car here just come on the lot. I knew this little old lady personally. She only drove it back and forth to school. I know, you think that the speedometer hadn't tricked over. I know it looks old, but I tell you, it was exposed. But man, listen, that's a good engine. That's exactly what they've done, and they've deceived the American public. This is how the hole grew. 1983, 1991, it's still growing. When El Chacon went off, I thought, surely they'll tell people the truth. The most serious long-term effect of the cloud is likely to be increased destruction of the ozone layer. They finally admitted it, but notice what they said. The aerosol particles in Pinatubo's cloud caused the chlorine from man-made chlorofluorocarbons to become more reactive. Notice how they covered that. They said, the volcanic eruptions are contributing, but what they do when they go up there, they get up there and they make them more active. That's scientifically unjustified. That's scientific garbage. That has no basis whatsoever in science. That can't make them more active. The volcanic eruptions themselves are what are producing it. Within the cloud from El Chacon eruption, ozone was depleted by 10 to 15%. So I thought, surely they'll be honest about it. El Chacon went off right here. And by week four, you can see where it spread. Here's Africa, here's South America, here's the United States, here's Asia, here's India. You can see how it continued to spread on week six. And by week 12, it spread across the whole earth. It just tore a chunk in the ozone layer you would not believe. And down here in this hemisphere, oh man, that ozone hole took off like mad. Finally, I don't know how this got by, but it got by. It was in the Los Angeles Times. Ozone layer hits new low in northern hemisphere. Latest drop traced to volcanic blast. Has plummeted to new unexpected lows over the northern hemisphere. This is the shielding effect. Said the 1991 eruption of Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines released tiny particles to speed the ozone layer's destruction. It was the first time they'd ever admitted it. Reason number six that it's volcanic eruptions. It's not man-made chlorofluorocarbons being released from spray cans. This scientist was honest enough to print this a long time ago, and it got in scientific journals. But very quickly, this sort of report started disappearing because the government put the quietus on it. At least 192 chemical reactions occur between substances in the upper stratosphere, along with 48 different identifiable photochemical processes, all linked to complex feedback mechanisms that are only partially understood. Selecting a few reactions, here's what they did. Here's what DuPont's got these crooks to do that call themselves scientists. Selecting a few reactions brought about in a laboratory and claiming that is what happens in the stratosphere, where it has never been measured. might be a way of getting to a predetermined conclusion, but it isn't science. But surely it's been demonstrated. Hasn't 1,000 times more chlorine been measured over the Antarctic than models say ought to be there? There's a good reason. Yes, high concentrations of chlorine are to be exact chlorine monoxide, but all chlorine atoms look alike. There is absolutely nothing to link the chlorine found over the Antarctic with chlorofluorocarbons from the other end of the world. What the purveyors of that story omitted to mention was that the measuring station at McMurdo Sound is located 15 kilometers downwind from Mount Erebus. An active volcano, some call this Erebus, whichever, from Mount Erebus, an active volcano emitting 100 to 200 tons of chlorine every day, and that in 1983 it averaged 1,000 tons per day. Might that just have more to do with it than refrigerators in New York or air conditioning in Atlantis? I'm amazed they've gotten away with this. The reason they've gotten away with it is because most of the American public is not scientifically oriented, and when you start trying to show them stuff like this, they say, well, I never did like science in high school. The large oval-shaped mauve area at left is the ozone hole, which stretches from the South Pole to the tip of South America at top. Remember that chain of volcanoes I showed you on the southern tip of South America? And right here is the South Pole. Here's South America, right here. You can see it over here. Notice how it stretches across the South Pole and goes up over South America. The reason is it's caused by volcanic eruptions. I hate to see people ripped off, and I hate to get ripped off, but nothing's going to be done about this. I've talked to other scientists about it, and they say, well, nothing we can do. Volcanic bite out of Antarctic zone. This year, significant ozone loss also occurred between 10 and 12 kilometers. Depletions began at the same time particles from the eruption of Chile's Hudson volcano reached Antarctica. That's in the chain that goes down through South America, fostering conditions that allowed pollution to break apart ozone molecules. So I'm not some wild-eyed nut that's running around loose that doesn't have any proof of what he has to say. I believe that chlorofluorocarbon gases are not the culprits responsible for the depletion of the ozone layer. Why? Reason number one, 75% of all man-made chlorofluorocarbons are released in the northern hemisphere. The vertical circulation patterns of the Earth therefore demand that the first ozone hole should have appeared over the North Pole. It did not. Reason number two, the chlorofluorocarbon gases are heavier than the atmosphere into which they are supposed to be rising, hence they cannot rise to the ozone level of their own volition. Reason number three, chlorofluorocarbons are washed out of the atmosphere by the precipitation cycle of the tropopause before they can reach the ozone layer. Reason number four, chlorofluorocarbon gases without the direct help of volcanic activity cannot penetrate the restricting worldwide temperature inversion, which begins well below the ozone layer at the tropopause layer level. Why do I believe that volcanic eruptions are directly responsible for the depletion of the ozone layer? Reason number one, the rate increase in major eruptions since 1950 is four times greater than any other time in history. Reason number two, most eruptions are occurring in the southern hemisphere, thereby causing the ozone hole to appear first over the Antarctic rather than over the North Pole. Reason number three, volcanic eruptions forcibly blow sulfur oxides, nitric oxides, chlorine oxides, and other ozone-depleting gases vertically through the tropopause layer into the ozone layer, bypassing much of the Earth's circulation and hydrological patterns. Reason number four, there's an active volcano in the Antarctic Mount Erebus, or Erebus. Reason number five, the ozone layer has slowly extended northward over the southern tip of South America, where a thick concentration of active volcanoes exists today. There's my proof, and quite frankly, anytime anybody wants to challenge me on any of this, I would be delighted to debate them, because my proof is so overwhelming, it's unbelievable. From these results, this is the 7th January 1994. Finally, somebody came out in a scientific journal and got away with it. Do hydrofluorocarbons destroy stratospheric ozone? Science, Volume 262, 7th January 1994. And I can't pronounce half these names. Rabashakera, Turnipseed, Jensen, Barron, Mills, Howard, Solomon. From these results, it is concluded that the ozone depletion potentials related to the presence of the chlorofluorocarbon group in hydrofluorocarbons are negligibly small. In other words, they don't cause it. The chemical reactions involving chlorofluorocarbons and other chlorofluorocarbons lead to negligible small ozone depletion potentials. Therefore, we conclude that hydrofluorocarbons and hydrochlorofluorocarbons containing chlorofluorocarbon groups are no more harmful to the stratospheric ozone layer than those that do not. So it just isn't doing it. Now, it's interesting how all this has come to pass. And the way this ozone hole has grown from 1983, 1991, it's even larger now, continuing to grow. They say it's residual effect, but it can't be. It reached record levels last year. The ozone layer over the South Pole, 6.76 million square miles, 13 times it's increased in 10 years. That's an increase of 4.3 times in 10 years. There's no question it's being depleted. There's no question that it's now larger than Europe. The question is it going to continue to grow? It will continue to grow. You can count on it. You can see the growth of the ozone hole in cubic kilometers. Starting in 1977, it was zero. 1980, it was 500,000 cubic kilometers. 1994, it was 23,500,000 cubic kilometers. It is now over 26 million, and it is continuing to grow. It is a very large hole, and it is letting in a lot of chlorofluorocarbons. This man had the honesty to publish what the elitist greenies are doing to country. DuPont, which doesn't release details of its cooperative giving, is a big contributor to the National Wildlife Federation and the other greenie groups. All coincidences, of course. It was just pure luck that about the time DuPont's patents on an old chemical were expiring, the greenies discovered how god-awful it was. It was just pure altruism that drove DuPont to replace the bad old chemical with expired patents with a newly patented chemical. If you go through and look at this report, which I'm not going to do here, he clearly outlines what happened and why it happened. For the love of money is the root of all evil. And that's exactly what caused all this. The following material is quoted directly from two sources, an article by Charlie Reese of the King Features Syndicate and one by Eric Peters in the Free Market, a newsletter of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. They demonstrate how the coincidence of bad science and dumb politics can result in a windfall of profits. Peters points out that the brouhaha about Freon eating up the ozone in the atmosphere occurred about the time the patents on Freon held by E.I. DuPont de Meuris were expiring. Lo and behold, the greenies began a big campaign based, as usual, on bad science that results in Congress effectively banning this cheap, readily available refrigerant. Freon can no longer be manufactured in the U.S. Heavy taxes are levied on existing stocks. Turns out, according to Peters, Freon leakage was environmentally insignificant. The chlorine molecule is heavier than air and sinks rather than rises. Moreover, volcanic eruptions release more chlorine than has been manufactured since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. DuPont is a big contributor to the National Wildlife Federation and other greenie groups. It was just pure luck, or was it, that about the time DuPont's patents on Freons were expiring, the greenies discovered how horrible it was. So DuPont, just because they love everybody, replaced the bad old Freon with a much more expensive substitute, quickly patenting it before other firms could jump into a market they largely dominated on existing patents. Was this just coincidence that this fantastic ripoff of the American public was allowed to happen? Or were selected greenies, scientists, and politicians suddenly richer after the hoax was completed? I can't answer that question, but I can tell you this. There is no way under heaven that the Freon was, or is, or shall, or can destroy the ozone layer. Now, one of the things that's interesting is different things that have happened with chips. Chips you put in computers, chips you put in type of electronic systems, chips you put under the skin. Scientists at AT&T and Harvard use sodium atoms, but there's evidence the technique could work with any element. Semitech, a research group sponsored by many of the largest U.S. semiconductor makers, is also experimenting with new lithography techniques, including a system called X-ray projection that uses reflected light. On a periodic chemistry chart, there are certain chemical elements that react violently to ultraviolet radiation. This chip that they put under the skin or in the forehead, if that is what the mark of the beast is, the initial sore could be a reaction to the ultraviolet radiation that's caused by the breakdown of the ozone layer. This is, Semitech makes a device 1/200th the size of a hair. Scientists at AT&T's Bell Laboratories and Harvard University have discovered a way to gently position individual atoms using light beams, raising the prospect of creating incredibly tiny chips. The new technique uses momentum generated by photons as particles of light to move atoms as they are deposited on the surface of a semiconductor metal such as silicon. The process is likely to lead to a new type of lithography, the printing process used to layer electrical components. Whatever it is they put under the skin is something that may cause a rather violent reaction. Here you see ultraviolet rays, two different types. UVA is weaker than UVB, but more of it reaches the earth and it can penetrate the dermis, our deepest layer of the skin. Over time, exposure can break down collagen, the skin's scaffolding, and lead to wrinkles. Live radiation is the main cause of burns and skin cancer. The shortest wavelength rays have more energy than UVA rays, damaging cells in the skin's top layer, epidermis. This thing that's placed under the skin, this mark of the beast, it only appears in the Bible to affect those that take it. This would explain why. Because they would be the ones that would have the chip. They would be the ones who would have the violent reaction. They would be the ones that would have the initial sore. They would be the ones that would have a cancerous-like spread across their entire body. The word mark is karagma. Karagma. That's what the word mark in the Bible means, the God-breathed word mark, karagma. In the days of the ancient world, karagma denoted the bite of a snake, the penetration of the fangs. That's the complete Bible library. Bullinger identifies karagma as a cut, a mark cut in, as its, and its companion word stigma as the prick or mark of a pointed instrument, Bullinger's critical lexicon of the Greek New Testament. It is quite possible that the reaction between the particles of light in scorching ultraviolet rays and the sodium atoms in a microchip transplanted in the epidermis could produce a single noisome and grievous sore at the place of implantation. If the sore is produced in this manner, it would undoubtedly be cancer of the melanoma type, which is known for its rapid spread. Melanoma, the mole that signals the most dangerous form of skin cancer, is ugly, and that's what gives it away. This could well explain the spread of one sower in Revelation 16:1 to become many sowers nine verses later in 16:11. First, you have one initial sower. Notice, Revelation 16:1-8-12, and then verse 2. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your way and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. Verse 8. And the fourth angel poured his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. There is no more scorching heat known to man than the ultraviolet radiation spectrum from the sun. If the ozone layer is broken down, you'll have direct penetration of ultraviolet radiation, a scorching heat. Verse 9. And men were scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of God, which hath power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. Verse 10. And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and the kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain, and blaspheme the God of heaven because of their pain and their sores. Now notice, this is plural. Remember back up there when the mark first occurred, they had a noisome and grievous sore back in verse 2. But now it has gone to sores and repented not of their deeds. Now let's go back to verse 2. Let's back all the way up about nine verses before this and notice it was a singular sower. And the first went, this is the first vial, and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore, singular, upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image. Sore is singular in verse 2, but it's plural in verse 11. Does one sower become many sowers between verses 2 and 11? I think it does, because I think the initial kickoff is melanoma cancer that's created. And would you believe I have actually come to the end of that? We are finished with vial 1A. Chili, the older you get, the slower you move. You're starting to move like Fred Sanford. We had a preacher down in Texas. His name's Lamar.